1st of August that we need to get adopted. Minutes were circulated. I hope members have gone through. And I will take corrections. That's the minutes of the 1st of August 2014. Corrections for page 1. Still sorting yourself out. Any corrections on page 1? Maybe just to ask those if you can write the proper the initial of Miss Shin. Somehow start, it looks like it's Mr. Shin with MR. Oh, okay. Just space it here. No, just ask for the space in between so that they look properly. Okay. Page 2. Any corrections? Page 3. Any corrections? Any mover for adoption?
Thank you, Chair. I move for adoption and also request that when the minutes are printed, it should be numbered, the pages.
Thank you very much. Seconder for the amendment. Honourable Mapu.
Thank you, Chairperson. I second the adoption of the minutes. Thank you.
Thank you very much. The minutes are duly adopted. We'll correct the first page, just the spacing on MR, and have it with the page numbering properly so that it's easy to read through. Thank you very much, members. I think we get that out of the way. As per our agenda and our program, we have set aside today to interact with the team from Ericsson and the delegation from the Swedish embassy. Oh, yeah, I forgot something. Okay. Sorry, my apologies, member, just before I go there. We have amendments to the program. I hope members have received circulated program. We were given the first program or parliamentary program that indicated that the week of the 24th would be a constituency week, which has now been turned into a committee week. And being that it's a committee week and we normally meet on Friday, and Wednesday, the 24th, is a holiday, we've put for the 24th and 25th as an oversight, two oversight days. In Gauteng, specifically, and I'm hoping that by that time, I'm hoping that post office strike will be off so that we can go to post office, to their mail center. Understand they've got a huge mail center, how they process and all that. Just for members, it's more an introductory oversight to have a better understanding of how this institution works, as well as visit CENTEC head office, interact with CENTEC, how they operate and what they do. And then again, following our engagement with the CETA on Friday with a number of issues that we want to start seeing, I thought it will be important that we also go there. So the plan is to go to CENTEC on Thursday morning, spend half a day with them, then move for lunch. After lunch, we move to post office and spend the afternoon with them. I've done that so that we have enough time to engage and interact, and hopefully the traveling will not be too much between CENTEC and the Johannesburg mail center. Would possibly use the N1, it should be lesser heavy in terms of traffic. And then on Friday, the 26th, then we'll move to CETA in Pretoria to interact with them. And we've set aside almost half a day with them. And then because it's a Friday, to allow members to travel back home that afternoon. So we'll have it until lunchtime and then have lunch and then travel back to our own areas and constituencies. Then there's a proposal, members, of the week, which is a constituency period time. The week of the 29th to the 3rd. This week, I'm proposing that we have a training program together, ICT training for members, together with VETS University. I'm going to email you the proposed structure of that training. We are engaging with VETS together with Parliament to try and finalize the approval, the logistics and everything. But what we're looking at is that on a Monday, we're looking at covering overview of markets, regulatory framework and institutional arrangements for the full day. So we'll definitely start with going through the legislation, overview of the markets, telecoms, internet, all that, and then go to the regulatory framework, the ECA, ECTA, ICASA, BACA, all those things. And then the institutional arrangements that we look at in terms of the processes. And then afternoon we'll have, each day we'll have assessments and panel discussions. The second day we want to deal with theory, pricing theory, practice benchmarks and trends, costing and pricing theories and practice, pricing trends and benchmarks in mobile fixed internet, case studies on mobile termination rates, and then afternoon specifically on the panel discussion on pricing. Then Wednesday we're looking at dealing with access theory, practice benchmarks and trends, where you talk about access in terms of mobile, fixed and internet, and then we'll deal with a case study on USAELS, and then we'll have a panel discussion in the afternoon. Thursday is quality of service, theory and practice, trends in the mobile and fixed, case study in terms of high demand spectrum. And then Friday we'll deal with the ICT Green Paper Policy Broadband Plan for South Africa, BB Council. Here we're going to have people, for example, when we deal with the ICT Green Paper Policy, the intention is to have one of the people who are drafters of that policy. And broadband as well, one of the people who are drafters of that plan. BB Council ICT Review Policy Panel as well. We'll have one person who was involved with that, and then we'll look at case studies on parliamentary oversight and study tours. So that's what we are intending, members, as a full week. The difficulty is that we have less committee weeks this year, and somehow we have a bit of longish constituencies. We have 2 weeks of constituency. We are consulting with party. We are requesting our party whip to give us the permission, but also request through Chief Whips Forum, other political party whips, to give permission for us to have this week as a training for members with VETS University at the VETS Business School, the VETS School of Governance in Gauteng. Once it's approved, we'll definitely communicate, but I think it's really a good program that can assist us in enhancing our work. And looking at this specifically so that by the time we start with our annual report analysis, at least we've passed through this process. So we'll definitely interact with members. We have put it as well in the program so that it's formally adopted by the committee. If the committee disagrees as well, it's for me to be able to have that sense, because we can't dictate to the committee. As a chair, I have to get permission and approval from the committee to be able to proceed while we're requesting the interaction with the parties. Any comments on that, members? Honorable Shin and Honorable Ma.
Chairperson, has this program been tailor-made for this committee? And would it be the communications committee as well? Are they also going to be included in this?
It's tailor-made for telecoms, but I think communications can still benefit, because majority, we're not closing it out. But for now, the discussion was around our members. We're looking at, I think I must engage the chair, I think that's a good point. Let me engage the chairperson of communications to include the members of communications. They'll definitely benefit.
Is this the cost of this, the transport, the accommodation, and the course fee, is that being paid for by out of the parliamentary committee budget, or was how who's paying to pay for it?
Currently, we're working on the modalities of all that. I'm engaging House Chairperson internal arrangement because she's responsible for training programs to see how do Parliament work. But FETS has indicated that they've got some special funds that they have as an institution that they should be able to assist as well. So once we know the final details, we'll definitely look at that and come back to the members. But currently, we're still looking, definitely, because it's traveling costs, it's accommodation, and it's the fee itself, the cost itself. So once we have finalized all that, we'll definitely come back to members. Honorable Maseko.
Thank you very much, Chair, and also thank you for the program. And the oversight one, the one of the 25 and 26, I think for me it's okay. And as you said, it's a preliminary visit. I want to second that. The second one, the vets, I personally will have a problem because that's the week of my vet studies and including exams, exact from the 29th to the 3rd. So I'm sure the committee can continue, but I'll have that challenge. We'll be in the same institution, but I'll be with the other. Thanks.
Make it.
Thank you, Chairperson. Good morning. The Johannesburg Post Office Mail Centre, as far as I understand it, the really big one is in Tshwane, and I'm certainly open to correction on this. And I also understand, especially given the topicality of the post office strike, that that's where much of the disruption is happening. I'll come back to that in a minute. So perhaps we could just investigate that. That's the first point. The second, in terms of the travel and accommodation arrangements for the constituency period and the ICT training, as you know, and I think you do too, Chairperson, we live in Gauteng, and given that we are dependent on the public purse, perhaps the committee could be very flexible in terms of booking accommodation and travel arrangements, because I will obviously carry the cost of that myself. There's no need to burden the taxpayer with accommodation or meals for me, given that I live in Gauteng. Then just as and I'm not sure if this is the appropriate time, but when is, one of our roles as parliamentarians is oversight, and especially this committee's oversight. Now, this post office strike that's been going on for a while, Chairperson, it would be exceptionally helpful if we could be proactive and quickly when dealing with this and actually have some answers before the committee, because I'm not sure if the other members are in a similar position, but I've been inundated with mails from people from across Gauteng who use the post office services, and I find myself unable to give them any answers. And I'm sure if I ask the same questions to the committee that I'm getting from my residents, we would also not, none of us here would be able to provide those answers. So if we could be quickly proactive in calling members from the post office to come before this committee and address us on issues like the strike when it happens, rather than just wait as we go through the program, I think it would strengthen our work as a committee, it would strengthen our work as parliamentarians, and would make us certainly more relevant. And I know there's at least one party in the House that would like to see Parliament irrelevant. So let's do something to make us more relevant. Thank you, Chairperson.
No, thanks. In terms of the post office strike, I definitely thought we could get a quick brief. Unfortunately, the whole team, including the Minister and Deputy, they're in Gauteng. They left Wednesday evening. They've been locked in discussions trying to assist the post office to resolve the issues. So I couldn't get anyone because they're based in Gauteng trying to resolve it, unfortunately. But I take note of the point, and it's very critical. All of us would want to have just a sense. I think we'll try and see how we fit it in. I know next week we're dealing with schools connectivity, but we'll see how we can sort of try and manage it, because it's something that is important, and especially because even the strike is becoming a bit violent and it's worrying. Yeah, we'll definitely check that. And thanks for the other comments. Honorable Kilian Maseko.
Thank you, Chairperson. I just want to say that I'm acutely aware that I'm not formally a member of the committee. I'm just here today to basically observe. I was just interested in the committee's reference to CETA. In the past, it reported to public service. Is there any change, or will they be reporting to us? Because I must say that was one of the major problems that we've always faced in the past, was sort of different role players reporting to different ministers, and that was a problem.
Yeah, CETA is now reporting to telecoms formally. It has been proclaimed, but as well Infraco is coming into the, I think from, what is the date, from September, they are now reporting to telecoms. So we have all, everybody that is dealing with ICT under one roof. So members, do I take that the program amended is approved? Honorable Seko, formally. Honorable
Chairperson, I move for approval and comment you for the engagement to ensure that members are capacitated in their area of work. And as you all know also that most of members in the committee are new. Thanks for the good work. So with that, I move for amendment for the adoption. Thanks.
Thank you. Seconda. Honorable Domain.
Thanks, Chairperson. I second.
Thank you very much. Let's move to the next item. You'd note, members, when we adopted our program, we have indicated that we're going to have a session, a capacity building workshop or interaction with Ericsson together with Swedish representatives. Just to introduce, but I think I will give them to introduce themselves. I believe in that people must speak for themselves. But I think,
Richard, just before the introduction, I so that I don't interrupt, I just need to, I request to be excused just that gently, and then I'll be back. Thank you.
Yes, I remember you've got to go to permit AGM here, and Honorable Killian had asked to leave early due to other commitments, as she's now just been brought in through currently. Just to say, members, that as we agreed in our program, we've got a delegation from the Swedish Postal and Telecoms Regulator and Ericsson interacting with us. Members would have received presentation or documents that they're going to interact with us on. I wouldn't want to say much. Honorable Shin, you want to say something?
Yes, Chair, we don't have a copy of this presentation.
Yes, my understanding is that it's there. I saw it on my documents. My secretary printed it. Mm-hmm. Thank you very much for making time. We really appreciate
your presence here and interacting with our community. We're looking forward to the engagements. Over to you, Dr. McGuffin.
Thank you very much, Chair, and thanks very much, Honourable Members, to afford us this opportunity. I'm Shilezi Makofani with Ericsson, and my responsibility is Government and Industry Relations for Sub-Saharan Africa.
Thank you very much, Chair, and Honourable Members. We, as Ericsson, we very much appreciate this opportunity that you've afforded us to come and engage with you and also share some of our views of the market. And we would also like to hear the challenges that you're dealing with as the policymakers and see where, as an industry, we can be able to participate and also assist you with that processes. Thank you very much. Apologies. My name is Tabiso Tugani, and I'm responsible for government and industry relations in Sub-Saharan Africa, working together with Shilezi and the colleagues from Stockholm.
Thank you, Chair, Honourable Members. My name is Bo Anderson. I'm the Chief Economist at the Swedish National Post and Telecom Authority, which do the regulation and regulatory work of the post and telecom sector in Sweden. I have my training in as a researcher in economics and have written my dissertation on price formation and competition on deregulated markets, and have now been working with the regulator for, among other places, recently with the regulator for 8 years now. Thank you.
Thank you, Chair and Honourable Members. My name is Mikael Hallén. I'm Director of Government and Industry Relations. I'm based in Stockholm, Sweden, and I have a group responsibility for policy and regulatory matters related to broadband. So I have the privilege to see many governments and regulators from the 180 countries that Ericsson has a presence in, and it's a great honor for me to be able to present before the committee and also, of course, to come to your beautiful countries. Thank you very much.
Maybe just some few words before Kyle starts with the presentation. That we have shortened it, so we've given you, I think, a much more larger pack that covers quite a lot of information. But you'll realize as you go through the slides that maybe some of the slides we would not go through because of the time that we have. But you've got a much more bigger pack on information. But you're welcome to ask on any slide. But for the purpose of the presentation, we will then just go through a bit of a short summarize. We will also do a bit of a change. So Mikael will cover on the mobile on the market trends, and then Bo will come and cover on the policy aspects, so that the two complement from a policy and also understanding from a market perspective. And then from there, then Mikael will come back and talk about the technology developments going forward. And then from there, then Bo will talk about a bit on the regulations and spectrum on that around that as well. So we'll kind of do some bit of a move through the presentations. And I think, Chair, you'll guide us on terms of the breaks. So where maybe there could be a position that you want us just to take a break, and then so we'll leave that to the Chair to guide us on that. What I can say maybe as an opening from a quick words from Ericsson's side is that We have seen this, we have got a vision called the Network Society, and in this vision we are saying around the world we will be seeing 50 billion connections taking place. I think as we know today, we're already over the mark of 6 billion connections around the world, so which means that I think we are seeing that the current connections in terms of GSM mobile systems, there's a lot of people coming onto the technology world. And also what we look at is that going forward we are going to see a lot of things connected. So there will start to be more connections beyond people, where we're going to see machine-to-machine connected, going to see machine and people connected. So we get into an exciting world and a very exciting industry going forward, and we are spending a lot of effort and research, as Ericsson, around that space. What then we're also doing some research around Africa, which my colleagues will reflect on, that shows quite a huge number of projections of growth in this space. But obviously that growth has got other implications, needs other facilitations, which is what in my role and our colleagues' role is going around the world, talking to the different stakeholders, because our belief is that if the market works together with technology and policy, then the three working together would be able to create a continuous symbiosis of synergy and also be able to realize the potential of this industry. Because we've realized now across the various parts of the world that ICT now is becoming an underpinning layer of mixed sectors, either driving efficiency or creating opportunities. So it's really becoming a much more revolutionizing what is happening beyond what we thought a couple of years back when the voice world started. And I think if we recall the time it took to connect places, I mean, it took many years. And then if we remember the mobile world when it started, how short it took to create millions of connections. Now in the broadband world, we are even talking of a shorter cycle of rapid of change, that we are going to see devices and everything being connected. On that remark, I want to hand over to my colleague, Mikael, who can then be able to then take us through this broader trend. And what I can just maybe finally say about Ericsson as well is that we, in this continent, over 100 years, the first installation was done in South Africa and Kenya, and then also globally, over 108,000 employees. I think with the spending of over 30 billion rands in research and development. So this is a company that is looking very actively in this sector and looking on the sustainability and continuous interaction on the sector. Thank you. Yeah.
Thank you, Shanetsi. I'd like to start by doing some reflections, and if we think of how fast the development goes, I mean, it's a bit fascinating. I think things we believe are obvious today, if we just go back a few years, we that was not really the case, and I think that the last 20 years we have started a change that really fundamentally is changing our whole society. And I'm of course thinking about the introduction of a digital mobile telephony that has allowed a completely new level of affordability and the spread of mobile phones for voice and text communication first, and now of course connections to the internet, and what really big impact that has on our society. And I can only say that the pace with which the world has changed during the last 10 to 20 years, it will never be as slow again, because the pace of change is just going to increase. Because like 100 years ago, when the electricity grid was deployed, because at least in my home country, which is very cold during winter, we wanted to have electric lighting and electric heating. So that was the kind of the services we were looking for that motivated the deployment of the electric grid. In a similar way, we deploy broadband networks everywhere, and it's very, very important, and I hear no government and policymaker saying that this is not the key issue to our country, that everyone should be connected, because it's about both having access to information and healthcare and education, etc., but also to keep our societies together. That's really, really important. And we see that how ICT now is coming into all the different sectors in the society, And one thing that is driving this is, of course, the cost for adding connectivity to things that can benefit from a connection is coming down dramatically. So our vision for 2020 is that everything that can benefit from a network connection will be connected. And we have some 5 years ago, we came out with this this vision, and it was, I think, a bit revolutionary because many people didn't really understand how can this be possible. But I would say that during the last 2 years, most people now realize, yes, we have utility meters, they are connected, and you can give feedback to consumers about their electricity consumption by the hour. And of course that will help us to manage the resources we are kind of spending, if you understand what I mean. And like electric lighting, now we have light bulbs wherever we need lighting, and in a similar way here, because the cost for a light bulb has come down. In the beginning we only had one per home, but now we have it everywhere, in a similar way this. And this 50 billion connected devices in 6 years' time, that started out really as a kind of thing we wanted people to start to think, what if this could happen? What would it mean for the utilities, for the car industry with connected cars and all of what we now see is happening? So this has been a very interesting journey, and we meet a lot of excitement from the different sectors, and I think policymakers have an enormously important role here, because us in the ICT sector, we know the technology well, and but of course that doesn't make us experts in health sector issues and education issues. So we need to meet and to do this, collaborate this together, and I think governments and policymakers has a big role on facilitating meetings these different sectors. In addition to, of course, that governments are potentially big users and can kickstart the usage of this by becoming big users and with e-government and e-learnings and etc. So this is kind of an ask to the committee and to policymakers to consider how you can facilitate these dialogues. Those are very important. And this vision that usually let's say commented on network society, we see big changes in how consumers are looking at things, and I'll give a couple of examples. If you go back 10 years ago, media, that was watching radio, TV, and reading newspapers. But today, of course, with all the social media, consumers are part in the content creation, so it's much more of a kind of a culture expression. So things are changing. Media is not what it used to be, and it's changing so rapidly, and it impacts business models and the technology, everything. If you go to healthcare, it's of course fantastic if we have very good hospitals and skilled doctors and have advanced equipment that can help us when we get sick. But it is of course even better if we don't need to go to the hospitals. So the focus is so much more now on wellness instead. And we read about watches that will look after our health and report automatically to our doctors that can monitor blood pressure and how we the medical status of us. In the education area, education is so much more than just going to a classroom and listening to a teacher. Now there are so many possibilities for children and us grown up to actually seek information and learn anything from watching YouTube clips. If you want to learn a specific one, you can be sure that there is someone that has uploaded a YouTube clip on it, or these services now being offered by many universities that can have not only 50 students in the room, but maybe 50,000 people following the lecture. I think that is fantastic. And these new trends in how we view the different things we do at work and in our free time puts new requirements on policy and regulation, but also on the infrastructure that should support these new behaviors. And this is what we call the interaction infrastructure, and what it is to a large extent is it's building on mobility, we think, and building out broadband coverage also in the less wealthy areas in big cities, but also of course and in the rural areas where we have lots of challenges to be able to do that in a cost efficient way. And there are good examples how very scarcely populated countries have succeeded to build out a good coverage to offer all citizens in a country broadband access at fairly high speed. And I think my Swedish colleague here will give an example from Sweden with concrete regulatory and policy decisions. Any comments or reflections so far? Please stop me any time if you have a comment or.
Not a question or comment, but do I have something another to ask about that? That we wait for all the presentations, or we ask as people present? Okay, just wanted to make sure.
And we think to make progress in this area, we think that there are three ingredients in this. Of course, we need to have market conditions, so there are consumers that are interested in using these new services, or there are industries that see the benefit of using ICT to lower cost or to provide with better services. And then technology needs to develop to be able to support new advanced services in a more affordable way. That's very important. And thirdly, policy and regulations need to be in place that support this in a good way. And I would say that if we go back 10, 15 years, just before the introduction of 3G, third generation mobile telephony, that was kind of the first step to have access over mobiles with smartphones to the internet. I would say that the policy and regulatory environment was very good because spectrum came out and there were policies that supported this. However, us as consumers, we had no idea why we needed 3G, right? And the technology was not really in place. It took another, I would say, 10 years until 2007, 2008, somewhere, when we had started to get really good smartphones and the technology had evolved and could deliver at least 1 megabit per second services. Then you could start to do something really valuable with technology is evolving extremely rapid now, and I think the challenge has now come back a little bit in the policy area, because now technology is very capable, and consumers are using social media and everything, and we have a little difficulties to grasp with things like privacy and those kind of issues. That's fairly new, and so I think it's important to have a debate in our societies about what is okay and what is not okay, and I think on the privacy and issue per se, I think the discussion is somewhat a bit confusing, because we have the government aspect in as one example, where I think everyone are okay with the usage to fight crime, of course, but then people might not be as comfortable if they feel surveilled unless that there is a crime related to that. So that is one discussion. The other is social media like Facebook and other things that we gladly say, yes, it's okay that you take all my pictures and information. And I learned just last week that the new agreement that you say yes to when you load the new Facebook application is that the application has the right to use your microphone and camera without you consenting to it. So Facebook can use your camera and your microphone without you consenting to it, and that's a bit scary to me. So I bring up this example to kind of highlight that there are issues here in the policy area that's very important, and I think most consumers don't understand this. So there is an important debate we need to have, and I think it's really important that policy and regulation is very clear on where is the line, and that it is very transparent, so everyone knows that in this case the government can go in and wiretap, etc., and in other cases it's not okay. So we have some clear policy here. So I think this is very important to allow continued progress here. This was, of course, only one example. Now, to look at the four key growth drivers we see for this development towards a network society, we see that ICT is coming into key sectors like utilities, transport, health, education, agriculture, etc., that will help us to address key society issues, environment issues or access to services. A second one is the access to affordable devices, and that the content is adapted to the local environment. And this goes, of course, both for very local information, but also for culture, of course. We want to listen a lot to local music stations, not only ABBA from Sweden. So that's important. On the policy side, we've seen that it's very, very good if countries have national broadband plan policies that will address the different issues to build out coverage everywhere and the quality of service aspects. That's very, very supportive here. And since we are depending so much on our connected devices, smartphones, opportunities there are for benefits to the society with the increased usage of ICT. But it's also true that the technology alone is not sufficient, and there really has to be a sound public policy in place, because benefits are not automatic. So the US policymakers and the committee, I view as a very, very critical role here to shape policy in this area.
When you look at the issue of key growth drivers, it's not only around driving growth, but it enhances the quality of life.
Absolutely.
Because if you look at it jointly, they would obviously, it's not only about if it grows the economy, but as well you're improving the lives, because there's income in the households, but you are able to better in terms of the life. If you are able to utilize ICT, as you're saying, on the issue of, for example, like it's through mobility, through transport, I think I would get worried around wellness and health issues. I mean, if you are to stay at home, and which is some of the concerns I remember, I think it's many people were saying to me, you know, if Ebola is to go, most South African men don't visit doctors. They wait until extremes, they are pushed to say, no, you can't even wake up. You can imagine such facilities. When you have such health scares, it also can become a weakness in its own. But if you look at issues around learning, for example, if you are to promote maybe takes, for example, if you have a teacher that is very good in one area of the country, and you've got the technology, that teacher can teach in many classes at
exactly.
the same time.
Right.
Utilization of technology to be able to improve what you are trying to deliver in terms of. So I'm just adding on what you reflecting here. And understanding the linkage between policy, at the time to find policy makers maybe taking time. And I think we sort of, there is a process of policy, we've got policy in place, but it's how you communicate it and how you manage it and how you control it, and how you are able to drive it as an implementation process to be able to achieve what you want. Because I think from a point of South Africa in terms of even infrastructure development, I mean, the presidential infrastructure identifies ICT as one of the critical areas. So it's already flagged, it's receiving that attention specifically, but it's how you drive it down, you drill it down to be able to achieve what you've got. So I thought that for me it's quite something that we'll look at, and it's very interesting. And where we're sitting, I mean, we still, I know other countries are already at 4G. We still 4G. We still 2 and 3 mainly, not at the. And the high level, the high speed, and the quality is still worrying.
Right.
I don't know if any members.
Thank you, Shanko. Very good comment.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you.
Yes.
Yes.
Honorable Killian and off. Honorable Killian and then.
Yeah. Is this not clear? Okay. I just wanted to ask the question. It is very interesting to, by the way, Jeff, 20 years ago, Ericsson came out with a fantastic new phone, and I thought I was arriving at that stage. I had a fit into my motor vehicle, etc. But those were the days. And I must say, Ericsson was actually taking the market in South Africa to a certain extent, but I think lost out thereafter. It's just interesting. I don't know what your current position is, but that is not what I wanted to focus on at this stage. What I wanted to say is, I don't think there's any doubt about the benefits and what it can do to grow.
economy, to give people access to information, to improve education outcomes and all of that. In South Africa, however, at this stage, we are still in a little bit in a catch-22. We have many operators in our cities, metro areas, and not as many interested in expanding access to networks in the rural areas, which is what we should be doing, to make them part of the broader economy. Now, in some cases, we have topography, which is an obstacle. In other areas, the rollout of networks is so easy because it's sand that you have to just dig up. In the Western Cape, many areas you can just put in your network cables, etc. No, not a problem. You can really have access for residences soon. The issue is from your experience, Ericsson, in other African countries, what have they done to access, to bring rural areas and make them part of the urban economy? Because unless we overcome that, now, is it incentive driven? Is it policy driven? Is it license driven? What do you do to get them to roll out where you really need it as a country?
Right. Thank you. And this is, of course, perhaps the question for, it all starts with that everyone have access to the network. And this is so important and critical because it is the first step. And then when everyone has access to broadband services in this way, then you can really tap into the real benefits to the societies, because then suddenly, as you say, people can have access to education, health, and other e-government services. But it all starts with the access. And this is why this is so fundamental. And I would say that there is not only a single thing that is missing or that people are doing. I think there are a couple of things, and one is related to licensing of low frequency bands. And as I will show a little more in detail in my next session, we can see that lower spectrum in the 700 and 800 megahertz bands that are becoming available when terrestrial TV broadcasting is moved a little bit further down in spectrum. That's a fantastic opportunity to lower the cost for building out coverage in the rural areas. That is one thing. The second thing is that I think it's appropriate to include coverage obligations when you do spectrum licensing in the lower spectrum, because it's very hard to come afterward and say that you should have built out coverage there and there and there if that was not a requirement when they acquired the license. And the third thing is that I think that if you can allow operators or licensees to share networks and share spectrum in the rural areas, so instead of building out 2, 3, 4 infrastructures in the rural area, which will be exceedingly expensive, even though you have access to lower spectrum, because there are much fewer people living out there. But we have example, and I think my colleague here from the Post and Telestyrelsen will explain one example that brought Sweden to 99% population coverage of 3G, 99%. And we are a more sparsely populated country than South Africa. So this access to lower spectrum include coverage obligations and allow network and spectrum sharing. With these three decisions, I think you have come a long way, because then technology and service providers to have those three pieces in place, I would say. So we'll talk even more about that later on. Yes?
My concern is also on this Cash 22 situation that Member Kieran has alluded to, and also the point of life that Chairperson has earlier on referred to, that the development of ICT has the potential of improving, you know, the quality of life. And without one being pessimistic, but at the same time, you look at the unintended consequences, you know, of this development, whereby we have to be innovative and make sure that as we develop, you know, technologically, jobs are not compromised. There are situations that, you know, some kind of a reality that you cannot run away from. That's why I'm talking about the innovation, that when the development process is taking place, simultaneously with the means of, you know, creating a conducive environment, that when people lose jobs on this other side, but they're also accommodated in other areas. But that is a reality that you cannot run away from, really a serious challenge. Wherever in other areas, we have to slow down on this technology just to make space that others still have a job. But we need it as a country that we have to develop. You know, we're exposed to information that we wouldn't have been exposed to if it wasn't because of this technology. It saves time. I mean, going to a bookstore, going to buy a book, read about Sweden, about Canada, this and that one. But with a gadget, I mean, within a short space of time, I have, you know, direct information about almost everything. And our social life as well. You know, children are so addictive to this thing. They hardly go out. But South Africa being, you know, a country of everything, you have the good and the bad in all countries, actually. You know, there was an outcry in the media that about obesity. Their children don't go out. They're glued to the TV, they're glued to the gadget. You eat, look at the gadget, carry on. By the time you say amen, the end of the day, the end of another day, you have to go out. So we have to campaign that as much as we need this, but must also make sure that this improvement of quality of life, we have to go out and interact and meet other people. But all in all, it's something that we need in the country.
Those are very good comments, and I think South Africa has that in common with Sweden and most other countries, that we need to learn how to relate and get the positives out of this new development and try to minimize the negative parts. And that's very important. I think on the kind of job creation point of view, I think with the build out of broadband networks, there is a fantastic opportunity for innovation. And who knows about the needs in South Africa better than the South Africans? So of course there are tremendous opportunities for startup companies, because this local content and local services are very, very attractive to us as users. And if we do the analogy with the electricity grid, I mean, with the electricity grid built out, people could start to innovate and come out with toasters and TV sets, etc., that all dependent on the electricity grid. The same thing we see are happening now in this space. And it's, of course, very much driven out of need also. And I mean, the mobile money services that I see here in sub-Saharan Africa, nowhere else in the world I see such advanced services in the mobile money area. And then one reason for this is, of course, that people don't have bank account to the same degree than compared to Western Europe, for instance. But now we are envying because it's so convenient to pay with your mobile, but I can't access that easily in Sweden. So we hope to learn from you here in the region how
the National Development Plan is our roadmap as a country. I presume you're familiar with that document. And in terms of the National Development Plan, one of the models it uses to drive growth in the country is public-private partnerships between government and the private sector, such as yourselves. And that pretty much echoes what you were saying, if you'll agree. And so I'm fully in support of that. I also like very much what you said about licensing and the rollout or making spectrum available to companies for the rollout of, and you tie that with the trade-off to roll out infrastructure in underdeveloped areas where it may not be so profitable to do so otherwise. So I'm very supportive of that idea. I'm not going to use the word challenges, one of the problems we face as a nation is inequality, which is clearly amongst the worst in the world. We have areas in our country, especially in rural areas, remote areas, where children do not have classrooms, they have limited access to learning materials. So even at the most basic level, we have a problem with educating some of our people. And clearly access to devices is one of those problems. Now, unless you can access the internet, I mean everything you said now in terms of connectivity, unless you connect it, you have the devices and you have the education to be able to use that connectivity, then you're permanently excluded. You're excluded from a global economy, you're excluded from a local economy, and you're excluded from any kind of e-government services. So clearly that's an area that that needs a lot of attention. Perhaps even before we look at rolling out networks, to make sure that our people are equipped and capable of using this. Thank you.
Thank you. Very good comment.
Maybe something, I mean, just to add on the comment, something to maybe it might fall into the policy or the regulatory domain as well. And as we move into this digital space, I mean, there's a lot is possible. And I think for, as Mikhail said before, this is so important to stimulate. One of the things that you have is a capability when people come and connect and interact with government, the technology does give you the ability to be able to give the users a bit of an advantage, where you could be able to say, if you access the government website or that, then you don't pay for that particular bucket of data, or it has to be discounted, it has to be done. There's a lot of permutation that I think can be stipulated as a pull effect, which then would help people to be able to even interact more with government.
Okay, so I proceed then. So a couple of data points on the development we see ahead. At the end of the second quarter this year, we had in the world 6.8 billion subscriptions, mobile subscriptions. World, and that is going to increase to more than 9 billion 5 years from now. And here I don't include machine-to-machine connections. So obviously machine-to-machine connection is what will take us up to the 50 billion mark. But and we clearly see that we get connected utility meters, we get connected cars, I'm sure we'll have connected dogs and cats because and many other things that we can think of. But what is perhaps even more impressive is the uptake of mobile broadband subscriptions that we see in the yellow dotted line here. We just passed 2.4 billion mobile broadband subscriptions, and it's going to pass 8 billion subscriptions 5 years from now. And what will it mean when basically everyone will have access to internet services in their pockets? What will it mean to our society? And the 9.2 billion, that is mobile subscriptions, like mobiles. Yeah. And all in the world. That's right. Sorry, I should have said it. These are global numbers, and of course, the 6.8 billion subscriptions we have today corresponds to 4.6 billion subscribers, because many of us have more than one SIM card. But still 4.6, and I think we are a little more than 7 billion in the world, including infants, etc. So it's, we're slowly getting there. But to reach also to the last billions, we of course need to address even more the cost for devices, as was rightly pointed out. This is the one main hurdle. So we are getting more and more devices that are connected, and with this slide I also highlight that the usage per device, and here I have laptops, tablets and smartphones, the usage is also increasing, and we see that over this time period to 2019, the devices become more capable, they have faster connectivity, larger screens, better cameras, etc. So the consumption per month will quadruple in this time. And if you have four times as much usage per device and you have many more devices, of course this will have a fantastic impact on the traffic that the networks are handling. And if you are not careful, of course the quality of service can be less. So therefore operators need to work intensively building out more capacity and coverage, and us in the telecom provider sector, we need to develop ever more efficient technologies that are more spectral efficient and efficient solutions to build out more efficient capacity and coverage solutions. These are global numbers as well. That's right. I will come to that in a minute, and I can say that the growth numbers in Africa is even more impressive. So that's right. So may I ask, Sherry, how we are doing in time, or if we? Yeah. So I'll continue before we take break. No, it's. The red bars are
growth between quarter one and quarter two. It's annually, so it's the estimation annually, the 65, or we also envisage an increase of the 65, the growth rate.
Yeah, I mean, 65% is from first quarter 2013 to first quarter 2014, and it's gradually, the growth rate is gradually coming down a little bit. It used to be 100% for a number of years, and then it came down to 90, 80, 70, etc. So, but these are enormous volumes of data, and having, I mean, double-digit growth, and this is much more than just double-digit growth, that puts a lot of strain in the network. And of course, it also comes down to the release of more spectrum, because without new spectrum, it will be increasingly difficult to increase the capacity. So, yeah. So, now focusing in or zooming in on sub-Saharan Africa, I have some data on this region. And by 2019, we see that there will be more than a half of a billion smartphone subscriptions in the sub-Saharan Africa. And traffic is not going to increase only by 10%, which is the global average. It's going to increase by 20%. So in that respect, of course, you have an even bigger challenge to manage the situation. On the other hand, it tells me that the demand is fantastic here. So people in the region really would like to use this service. So it's a positive problem to have. But we need to address it properly. And here we see the data growth, 20% in the region, and the voice growth, which is double during the same time. And what's also worthwhile reflecting on is that the growth of voice service has a natural ceiling, because we only have 24 hours a day, so we can't talk more than that, right? But how far can mobile data go? It can grow indefinitely, because we can have better screens, can have higher resolution of devices, and we can have many, many more devices per person. Smartphone, tablet, laptop, connected car, connected dog, lots of stuff in our homes that can benefit from a connection, of course. And all are generating traffic, and the different devices can speak to each other to facilitate our daily lives as well. Here we see population coverage for the three different technologies in sub-Saharan Africa. So while we see a continued development of coverage for GSM in the rural areas, the big change here is 3G and also 4G to a large extent. But I want to emphasize the development of coverage for 3G, and the reason for this is related to devices and affordability of devices, as was commented on before. And since the ecosystem of devices for 3G has had another 10 years, I mean it was more than 10 years since 3G was introduced, we have devices in all segments of 3G. Whereas LTE and 4G is more prevalent in the higher and mid-tier segments. And of course, over time, it will also come down to the lower tiers and more affordable segments. But for the time being and during the next 5 years, we think that most of the affordable devices that give really good connectivity to the internet, sufficient for most of us, will be in the 3G segment. And in some consumer trends. Ericsson has a research team that does more than 100,000 interviews per year with consumers in different parts of the world. And these are some conclusions in the sub-Saharan region. Many are, of course, common with other regions, but this is specifically for this region. And the usage is, of course, becoming data-driven. Access to the internet is the thing that we all want to have. And consumers are participating in the content creation. That's very evident. And when the digital footprint, the broadband coverage is spreading from city centers to rural areas, we also see a lot of activities in areas such as mobile banking and those kind of new services. And we think it will just continue with health and education and agriculture, etc. And social media is, of course, a fantastic driver, in particular in the youth segment, but I think many of us also enjoy sharing experiences, etc. And I've got many likes from pictures I've published from my trip here to South Africa, so I hope I can have contributed to that. Many of my friends want to come here. Then finally, a few thoughts on the technology side and what we see here and what has implications on how we design our networks is that everything is becoming mobile. All services we want, at least also to consume on our mobiles, TV, mobile money, email, Facebook, everything. And all the services are going to the cloud. So we don't, without the connection to the internet, we can't do anything, right? And this puts really high requirements on the good quality of service of this broadband connection. So we're coming down back to spectrum licensing, having policies that will encourage operators to build out coverage everywhere, and that we continue to develop the technology so it can provide with ever more efficiency. And for a market to thrive, we both need the iconic high-end devices that have very advanced functions, because this will drive the advancement of our networks. We can do many more things based on these devices, but perhaps even more important from a country perspective is, of course, the availability of affordable or lower cost smartphones. And I was very happy last week because in India there has been some great developments here, and a company called Intext Cloud, which is an Indian handset manufacturer, they have launched a new smartphone building on a completely new low-cost operating system, Firefox. It supports 2G and Wi-Fi today and will come out in a 3G version later this year. And this 2G version sells at $33 on a website. And most of these more affordable smartphones, they are going for a direct business model, so you buy them on the internet. You don't buy them via the operator, so there are no subsidies. But $33 is a quite good price. And it has a big, I think, 4-inch display. It's of course perhaps not as high quality as the iPhone, etc. But you have the size, and I mean it's not a bad display in any respect. And you can do of course a lot with it. And these kind of initiatives, I think, are very important then to address poorer people that should be able to access the first internet services. So prices are coming down here also. On the business model side, one change we've seen here sustainable business model that will become relevant to most part of the world. And it works in the way that that you can have one subscriptions for all your devices or the whole your whole family's devices. So maybe you have 6 or 8 or 10 different kind of devices in your household. Then you get then you pay for the number of devices you have, and you get unlimited voice and text, unlimited, and you have one common data bucket that you share. So you're not running out of your data bucket in your smartphone, and you have still a budget on your PC. So you have one common. And when if you run out of data bucket in mid-month, you could easily buy more. So it's a more similar model again to the electricity business model, that it's consumption driven. Yes, sorry.
Thank you. Just as far as that goes, I've noticed with Microsoft Office, for example, which I use, I buy a license, an annual license, as opposed to buying the package in the store. I now buy an annual license.
Exactly.
For that package, and that license, I install Office across 5 different devices. So I have it on my iPhone, I have it on my laptop, I have it on my computer at home, I have it on my iPad, and then renew that every year. So I can see that applying to applications as well. In terms of data share plans, I think we know that most mobile operators are looking to data as a revenue stream rather than voice calls,
mm-hmm.
and certainly we've seen that trend. The last I bought a personal experience anecdote. I bought a laptop as well as 2.5 gigs of data, and I think I used that 2.5 gigs of data within a couple of days, incredibly quick. And the package that I signed, it just carried on charging me for data. So I got the absolute 2 months of horrendous bills for this data. I've since discovered that if I just plug in I have an unlimited voice and data package on my phone. But if I use my phone as a modem and plug it into my laptop, I have unlimited voice and data, so it's all for free. So this all speaks to user education, and perhaps this is where our regulators could come into this, that kind of education needs to be conveyed to the consumers. Otherwise, we will find the private sector, given their nature, will just carry on ripping off the consumer.
Yeah.
Thank you.
That's a very good point. I think it's to spread good use, how you use these services and have a lot of public debate, I think is very important also from a kind of education point of view. And another kind of bonus that I see with this business model is that it will be increasingly profitable for operators to build out more capacity and coverage. Because if I am in a place where there is no coverage or very poor quality, I will not be able to consume my data bucket. But if I have very high speed, very good coverage, I will consume my bucket much faster, which means I will quicker come to the point where I need to top up with another gigabyte. So I think with this business model, operators are in a position to line up or correlate the increased traffic and increased cost with increased revenue. So I think this is good, because previously in the beginning we had all-you-can-eat plans, and it became a problem for operators that few users, 5%, they consume all capacity. And it was operators didn't gain anything in revenue if they build out more capacity. But now they will with this kind of model. So I think it's a positive step. And this shows kind of a roadmap for the services, that we maybe start with a smartphone and an initial data plan with unlimited voice and text, and then maybe we get a few more devices, we add on LTE to get higher speeds, we top up with more data, and then we have also started to see how operators are bundling because we are so dependent on our smartphones and our connectivity to the internet. So this means everything, basically. Then finally, this shows the pace of change we spend.
Sorry, just on the previous slide, on the performance drive loyalty, I was just looking at the loyalty rewards being the lowest. I was just imagining that with the MTN, that you phone for 6 rand and get 60 rand free. So I'm sure that graph is with that incentive, it must have moved higher.
Yeah, this is a global, or it's a number of countries this was investigated, and you have that in the source information there. But of course, it can vary from country to country, but overall, it was very clear that the top requirement that influenced your loyalty, and you were willing to change operator if your provider did not offer a good coverage where you live and work and where you spend time. So
it looks like the base was from other countries. If I look at it, is it Brazil?
Then Brazil, China.
Brazil, China.
Indonesia.
Okay.
South Korea, Japan, US, UK, Sweden, Russia, Turkey, Chile, Mexico. So it's we try to have a mix of both developing countries and developed countries with different levels of maturity for smartphone development.
If later or in the future on this, while you're looking at the developing world, that because you did indicate that Africa is a very important component.
Absolutely.
So it would have been interesting to see that included in this.
Absolutely. And we have many surveys that are both specific to sub-Saharan Africa and include that. It's just that we sometimes have broad service where we have many countries included, and then we have some specific ones maybe regarding how people view their or take their TV services that are more kind of and maybe I think we are doing a survey in sub-Saharan Africa on, was it TV services or?
Thank you. Chair, we are doing a study now in South Africa, Kenya, and Nigeria on how people use their mobile phone, and then also we are trying to study how they are interacting with TV and how the mobile phone changed their behavior towards TV. So we would be happy to share later once we've concluded on that.
Good. So my final slide for this part here, this shows the number of subscriptions for the fixed places. I mean, we have fixed connections to about 1 billion, and during the last 25 years or so, we have connected people, and now we see the next thing that will really take things to the skies, how we connect the things. I'm feel very excited about this because it engages potentially all people on the planet, because you can start to innovate based on what you know of your customers. So there are so many opportunities here. I think we have a question.
Thank you, Chair. Just a comment. In the presentation, there's a slide that you haven't shown up, understandably. Mobility and broadband, one network, many pipes.
That's right.
And I think when you look at that slide, it's a magnificent slide, because when you look at it, it just gives you the idea of how connected this world is that we live in, and the ability that we have to connect, and the technologies that we can use, and it's amazing. I read when you say 50 billion coming to this slide, you say 50 billion connected things, and of course we include our refrigerators in that, we include our home security, we include the pool pumps, and then there was a recent article on driverless vehicles or connected vehicles, and how important it is to have a reliable network and network traffic.
Absolutely.
Because if you suddenly lose your connection, you're going to find yourself smashing into the car in front of you. So just where we're going, as you said, you're very excited. I'm also very excited by this. I think it's the most amazing thing to happen to our world. So I think it's a great presentation.
Thank you so much. And on that note, with self-driving devices, I mean, in I think most big cities in the world, we have problems with air pollution and traffic jam. We spend far too many hours in traffic jam each week. And we did a survey together with the university that they concluded that if we all would have self-driving cars, we could get rid of 90% of all cars in the big cities. And what would that mean to traffic jam, air pollution? We could, instead of having big car parks, we could build homes, apartments or offices or just green open spaces. Because honestly, we use our car half an hour in the morning, half an hour in the afternoon, and if we could start to go together instead of sitting one in each car, and then during the rest of the day, the 23 hours, it could become available to someone else. So I mean, it's quite interesting prospects.
Just a question. What is currently happening in the developed world with regards to information ethics? Because if we look at what is going to drive this explosion, video, etc., and if what you're saying about Facebook, you know, the extent of that intrusion into your privacy, basically. What is the world doing about that? I mean, is somehow there must be a balance. So is there anything happening in the developed world about that? And how could we make sure that we use it for the benefit of the people,
right,
to get access to information, etc., but to also just bear in mind that there is also the potential risk.
So thank you for the question. I would say that I don't think we have come very far. But I think it's important to divide the issue in two parts. First, you have the one related to the government. And if you trust the government and you have a very clear policy on when it's possible to watch what's going on between you and the ones you communicate with. And it's very transparent. As everyone knows that under certain circumstances, when fighting crime, etc., the police has the right to go in and wiretap, etc., then I think all of us are fine with that. Whereas, in other states, when perhaps the government or the police is not as trusted as in other countries, then maybe people are still nervous about that. But I think in Sweden we have clear rules on what can be done and under what circumstances. So it's very clear what can be done and it's very transparent. Everyone knows that you need to go to court and it has to be a certain suspicion of a certain level of crime, then the police can go in and listen in. On the enterprise side, I don't think we have realized, come even close. And I think what I see on social media, people are upset about this new changing in license agreement and Facebook, as one example, issued. And I have kids seems to have no problem to share everything they see. So I think it's a bit immature, but we need to have a debate, I think, in our society about this.
Thank you, Chairperson. I'm only interested on that one that you were talking about, the case study that you, I think this is very important, this case study that you are doing in Sub-Sahara. So I just want to know the time frames. I can't wait to hear the outcome. And then the other thing, I don't know, but I believe in the workshop, there's no one who's right, there's no one who's wrong. We just talk. The more we do wrong, the more we learn. I just want to know about this thing of toilet. How do those things get in the network? Because this is where people are being humiliated and insulted. There is something that is called, that's called toilet. You hear veterans about two people communicating. There is then oppressed all the provinces. I don't know how. So maybe your name is there. Thank you.
I'm not sure I understood the question.
No, I think it's more on
okay. Okay, thank
you. Like a social network. But the things that people are talking there are bad things, and they are mentioning other people's names.
Right.
That thing can even go to an extent to divide families, because they are talking serious things about the people. I've been following it in my constituency to see what can police assist so that the thing.
Yeah, that's right. And I mean, this network behaviors and how you behave on the network is also an important debate to have. And we had a case in Gothenburg in Sweden, where it turned out to be two young girls that were posting pictures and wrote things anonymously, and they pointed out other girls in the same school that they were doing bad things, etc. And this ended up as a big police investigation, and they were sued and punished for this. So I think it's, I mean, in the beginning it's easy to kind of hide behind, you behave differently on the internet than in the real life, but I think we're quickly getting to a situation where there is no difference. If you don't say things in real life, you should not say it on the internet either. The same rules should apply, I think, how we relate to each other. And I think that's. But I think it's also a level of maturity in usage.
Through you, Chair. That's on the point of the study. Yeah, we expect, I think it's just to finish around the end of October. So I'll just see on the final draft material. But we are happy to share that. We'll definitely email it to the Chair, and then you can be able to have access to it. So it's more, it will be public information. So it's on you.
Oh, thank you, Chairperson. Go you. The mic. Thank you, Chairperson. This thing of a Facebook scam, whereby a person will behave as if it's another person, it's also bringing some of discomfort in the society.
Thank you, Chairperson. Through you, Chair, your study with the trend towards micro devices and laptops sort of moving into to one ubiquitous unit, like an iPad, for example, that you do. You know where I'm going with this, that the screens are getting bigger on a mobile telephone and smaller on a laptop. Your survey, will that include laptop data as well, or laptop usage, or iPad usage, or is it restricted purely to mobile phones? Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Chair. We normally check on the users that would have devices, but then because obviously it depends on, sometimes you try to recruit as much as possible and understand how they are using it today. And those that don't have it, how are they, if they have it, how will they use it? And then those that have it, how are they planning to use it in the future? So then we give them some bit of cases of what the technology evolution would be. And then based on those cases, then they will tell you, if I have this opportunity, I'll do this. If I have this opportunity, I'll do that. So it does check on various areas. Because one of the things we've realized with the current first round that we did, which I think that one we can avail, is probably a little bit old, but it's not that very old. We have realized that a lot of people were starting to wanting to stream if they had an opportunity to do so. But then when we check with the, because we are managing network operators in Africa, it's over 21 countries where we are running networks, then you realize that there is a lot of a tendency to switch off the data on the phone. And that is where then there's that thing that needs to be balanced between, because one of the challenges that the people have is that if this application updates in your phone or updates on that, it eats your package. And then that person doesn't have a package to do the other things. And I think those are some of the points that maybe needs to be thought through between the industry and the policy. What do we do? Because, I mean, some of these things are inhibiting the behavior of positiveness on the technology. So, but we will be checking those various parameters. You'll be able to see them in the final outcome.
So, thank you, Sharon. So, this was all for me for now.
I gave for the delegation.
I gave it to
you.
Oh, to copy.
Okay.